Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams, or macros, or anything else. Stop all that counting so you can start getting to a healthy weight without dieting and get on with your life. How amazing would that be, right? To wake up and think about your day, not about your diet. That's what we're all about here. That's what we're aiming for, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, and any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The problem is what's eating at you. It's not what you are eating that is the problem. It's why. So let's talk about how to take care of yourself during the holidays. Christmas and Hanukkah are about a couple of weeks away, and Kwanzaa, I think the same thing. Let's talk about the holidays and how that you can practice self-care, which is when it's really, really important, because the most wonderful time of the year, that's supposed to be the holidays, the most wonderful time of the year is not so wonderful for a lot of people. We watch Hallmark TV shows and Hallmark commercials, and we see ads and Instagram posts and all kinds of social media posts where everyone is looking so happy, so happy. Happy families beaming together, getting along, wearing matching sweaters. It's all so picture perfect. So if that is you, if that is actually your life, well, lucky you. But if that is not you, you're not alone. In fact, many people get more depressed during the holidays. Not only the comparison with those perfect Hallmark families, which in itself causes depression and sadness. Hey, my life is not like that. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with my life? Look at what my life is missing. I don't have that. I don't have the generations of beaming people. Maybe you got generations of people, but they're not beaming. Maybe they're bickering and squabbling and fighting or being silent, or they don't get you, or, you know, they're Republicans and you're a Democrat, or it's all not so wonderful. Causes feelings of depression and sadness. There's also this pressure. Be happy. Be happy. It's the happiest time of the year. Be happy. Have fun. Buy presents. Go out. Celebrate. Well, what if you don't feel like being happy and celebrating and going out? You know, maybe there's not enough time. Maybe there's not enough money. And if life is not going so well for you during the holidays, it can feel very isolating during this time. Here are some types of people who are at risk, courtesy of Psych Central. These are the people who are most at risk over the holidays. Perfectionists. Perfectionists expect every holiday meal to be absolutely perfect, and they are on a mission to ensure that everyone on the gift list receives exactly the right gift, which is also wrapped perfectly. Although there's something inherently wrong with a desire to excel in any area of your life, when perfection becomes a requirement and when you feel not so good about yourself when you're not perfect, that's a problem. Closely tied to perfectionists are chronic worriers. They're anxious about every possible negative outcome. They are like living as if life is a chessboard, and they are thinking 10 steps ahead of life. Now, there are definitely ways in which thinking ahead is good for you, and there are certainly legitimate concerns around the holidays. Yes, there are more people driving drunk than other times. I mean, there are real reasons to have a certain amount of anxiety. But when worrying becomes extreme and you're thinking about all the possible permutations of things that could go wrong at any time, then all you're doing is feeling like you're a bundle of anxiety and you're living in the land of what if. You know, what if is fear about the future, versus what is, which is reality, that which you know to be true in the present. So if you are a chronic worrier, think about what you're worried about. Are you creating anxiety, not purposefully, but just thinking about every possible thing that could go wrong, and what if this, and what if that, and what if this? Then you're creating anxiety because you're having anxiety in the present about a future that may not exist. So to counter that, stay with what is. What do you actually know to be true in the present? Also, older people are often more isolated from family and friends. That puts them at risk. And then there are people who are grieving, people who've lost someone over the year. Or even if the death or loss they've experienced isn't recent, there can be painful memories and feelings that are triggered at this time of the year when you remember the happy times that you did have with the person that you've now lost. So those are some types of situations and people that have a hard time over the holidays. And although people respond to stress differently based on their resilience, their personalities, their histories, there are some common symptoms that you want to stay alert for. And being aware of these signs can help you reduce your own stress over the holiday. If you find yourself having a lot of physical symptoms, like more headaches, more muscle tension, more fatigue, maybe disruption in sleep patterns, that's something to look out for. If you're not really thinking clearly, if you can't concentrate, if you feel like your judgment is off, or you just feel like things have a very negative cast, that's something to think about. Emotional feelings like being out of control, being nervous, being anxious, hopeless, angry, all of those feelings are normal. They're normal responses to situations. But if you feel as if you're experiencing them in a more intense way that is normal, that is a warning sign. And if you find yourself, say, turning more to food to cope, or turning away, or obsessing about it, being preoccupied about it, or drinking, or anything. If you're using anything to cope with the stress of the times, that is a problem. So what can you do to take care of yourself? Well, I already told you to challenge the what-if thinking, the fear about the future, and the anxiety by really grounding yourself in the present. What else can you do? Here's some things you can do. Just say no. Just say no. Although there are, of course, obligations that you need to meet during this time, like you can't say no to the office holiday party because of politics involved, or you can't say no. You're not gonna show up for Christmas dinner or Hanukkah dinner if your whole family's expecting it. I mean, maybe you can, but maybe it wouldn't be the best thing for you. It's okay to say no at other times. You don't want to be a Scrooge and say, bah humbug, I'm not doing anything, because then you just feel bad. But you also don't want to be overscheduled. So be mindful of your own self, your own needs, your own ability to tolerate a lot of people or a lot of situations. Think about who's going to be at the event that you're going to be at. If it's people that you are always finding yourself kind of girding yourself as you go up to the front door and knock, if you're like, okay, I'm going to get through this, then maybe that's a sign that you shouldn't go. But if you know that you're going to go and be among people who you feel comfortable with, you can relate with, then you say yes to that. But really, be mindful of yourself, be mindful of the situation, be mindful of how much interaction with people do you need or want. Some people need a lot of people around them all the time. Some people need very few people around them. So think about what's right for you, and make decisions accordingly. It is okay to say no to invitations, because when you say no to other people, sometimes you're saying yes to yourself, and then you feel better. And when you feel better, you're less likely to use food for comfort, distraction, or what have you. Also get some exercise that is like organic. A lot of people get exercise, they go to the gym, they got their headphones on, they're watching TV, they're watching a music video, they're at spin class and someone's yelling at them to go faster. This is my image of spin class, by the way, like some very highly caffeinated person yelling at you to go faster. I'm sure spin class is really fun for a lot of people, but to me, that causes anxiety. So you know what I say to spin class? No, not going to spin class. So a lot of times when we go and we exercise, it's overly stimulated. There's too much going on. Aim for getting restful exercise. Now, that might seem a contradiction in terms, but restful exercise is something like going for a walk outside, going out and being without your headphones, without listening to anything, just being with yourself on this walk. Walk your dog, walk yourself, go on a hike, do something. Build, if you're in a place where there's snow, build a snowman. You know, have some fun, but do it in a way that's where you're really connected to nature and to yourself. Also, and this is related to this, you know, restful exercise, reduce your exposure to all this like constant stimulation. Around the holidays, there's sounds, sights, smells, there's more movement, there's more little lights and holiday songs and kind of like in your face Christmas caroling, and not that these things are bad, but there's just all of this like stimulation. You're looking at things, everything's bright and shiny, and then there's music and everything's sort of amplified. So it's important to get some downtime. You know, drive your car without listening to music, without listening to the news. Make your Christmas lights or Hanukkah bush. Put the lights, maybe just have them be on. Don't have them blinking. Detox from technology for a little while. This really does help. It helps you center yourself. People talk a lot about mindfulness. It's hard to be mindful in this world where everything is kind of coming at you. So when you give yourself a little space, even if it's just a few minutes, to be with yourself in a compassionate way, just even a few minutes can help. Kind of makes you calm yourself. And when you're calm and you can be with yourself, you're not going to use food for distraction. What else can you do to take care of yourself? Be open to new traditions, especially if you have experienced loss or some kind of trauma in this year. So, or if you just are sick of the same old Christmas. It's the same people, the same family, the same fights, the same this, the same that. Maybe you want to shake things up a little bit. I know someone who felt this way about Thanksgiving. And so this year, instead of doing the same Thanksgiving that everyone always has, and it's the same food that nobody really likes, and the same arguments, and the same this, and the same that, she invited her family to go and serve meals to the homeless. And they ended up having an amazing time, and it was really a bonding experience, and it really made them think about their own lives and connect to gratitude and thankfulness in a new way. So do something different. You know, instead of putting up your own decorations, go and go and look at the lights that other people have. There's always that street, right? There's always that street where everybody puts up amazing lights, and you go, and it's so pretty, and it's so holiday-ish. And do that instead of putting pressure on yourself, if it feels like pressure, to make your house extra spectacular and special. Maybe this time you go and look at someone else's lights instead of putting up your own. Serve meals to the homeless, especially if you're going to be alone. It's hard to feel alone when you're connecting with other volunteers and you're doing something that feeds your soul by feeding other people. It takes the focus off loneliness when you're there with others. Another thing is to protect your sleep. This is something you could do to take care of yourself. Protect your sleep. I talk about this a little bit in my book, The Binge Cure, but sleep, not getting enough sleep, is actually tied to stress, and stress is tied to weight gain. So getting enough sleep is so essential for all aspects of your body. And don't lose sleep over the fact that maybe you didn't get the perfect present, or the meal wasn't perfect, or the gifts weren't wrapped perfectly. Don't lose sleep over stuff like that. Just remind yourself of what is going well for you this holiday season. What are you appreciative of? And recognize and acknowledge yourself if you feel lonely, if you feel disconnected. That is how you feel, and you need to honor that. And that goes to another way that you can take care of yourself, which is to feel your feelings. Identify your feelings. Feel your feelings. The holidays bring up strong emotions. Can bring up everything from, again, you know, losses, new relationships and anxiety over that, meeting the expectations of visiting family if they're coming to you, or having to feel like you've got to behave a certain way if you're going to them, or if you step through your parents' door and you feel like you just regressed 20 years, and it brings up all kinds of past anxieties. These are intense emotions that need your attention. They need your attention. So it's natural to have strong feelings at this time of year. Identify them, normalize them, and respond to them. Because when you respond to yourself, remember my very technique, validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. When you respond to yourself by validating what you feel, by acknowledging, of course you feel this way, and validating it, and reassuring yourself, there's a reason you feel this way. It's not going to feel this way always. This is just temporary. This is how you feel now. You are capable of dealing with challenges. You can deal with this challenge too. If you remind yourself of that, then you feel better. And when you feel better, again, food is not a problem. You've made yourself feel better by responding to yourself in words instead of reacting by eating something to distract yourself and numb yourself or reward yourself, whatever it is. Emotional eating helps in the moment. It absolutely does. It is a frenemy. It helps in the moment. It does something for you. But in the long run, it hurts you. It makes you feel bad. And it makes you feel bad about yourself. So then, not only do you feel bad about what you ate, you feel bad about yourself. And that compromises your self-esteem. And having a compromised sense of self-esteem, it, you know, is not conducive to a sense of well-being. And again, you may be using food to escape yourself. If you feel bad about yourself, food takes you away. Give yourself the present. The present. And by that I mean not a present, the present. It's like that Kung Fu Panda quote. Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. Today is a gift. That's why they call it the present. I remember watching that with my kid. I think she was like 2 years old. She had no idea what was happening. But I saw that and I was like, oh, that is awesome. Actually, I think we saw it when she was 2 years old. But that is just one of the best lines ever. So give yourself the gift of being present. When you worry about what everyone else is thinking, how are they having a good time? Well, you know, are you going to be able to entertain people? Is the food going to be good? What are you going to do with them tomorrow? How are you going to, you know, how are you going to respond when you're, you know, when you're a supporter of Mayor Pete and your grandfather loves Trump? I mean, how, instead of worrying about that, just be like, be here. Be now. Right now, again, this is a little bit of what is. Right now, enjoy what is. Be in the present moment. I have a whole chapter in this book, a whole chapter related to being in the present. So living in the moment. And that is so important. So when you stop trying to make your holiday ideal, you open up space to savor the holiday as it is. There are going to be moments that you can treasure and moments that you would like to forget. But one way to start embracing the present is just taking a few minutes to think about something you feel good about right now. In my online coaching group, I have an online small group called the Inner Circle Group. And we always end the session with saying one thing that you feel good about, something that you feel good about who you are, some quality about yourself that makes you feel good about yourself, or something that you feel proud of that you've done in the week. And it really helps people connect to, it's so easy to believe the bad stuff or to tell yourself the bad stuff. It really helps you connect to, well, what's good? What do you like about yourself? What's true? What's meaningful? What do you like about yourself? What are you proud of? And the more that you do that, the better you feel. And the better you feel, the less likely you are to use food to feel good. See how it works? The key to overcoming emotional eating, binge eating, stress eating, any kind of eating that you are uncomfortable with, the key is really to make peace with yourself, to respond to yourself in a new way. When you do that, everything changes. Everything. And remember, self-care happens all year long, not just the holidays. So what are your challenges this season? Give me a call. Let me know. The number here in the studio is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. Let me know what your challenges are right now. You can also go to my Facebook page, Nina Savelle Rocklin, and there are two pages. One is Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and then there's my Nina Savelle Rocklin page where I'm actually live right now. And if you have any questions, write them in the comments. Let me know what your challenges are right now during the holidays. And for that matter, let me know what you feel good about, what you're proud of. Why not? Let's practice. Let's practice that. Okay, so here is a question from Jolie. She says, why do we as a society feel sorry for heroin addicts or people who have anorexia or are alcoholics, but when it comes to people who are overweight, there's so much discrimination and disgust? She says she feels like people with addictions get pity, whereas she says when she goes to a grocery store, people judge her and look at her like she's doing something wrong. Why is this? Jolie, this is a great question. And I'm going to talk a little bit now about fat shaming and body shaming and what it is and what to do about it. So, why is it that people, so Jolie makes a great, or Jolie, I'm not sure, Jolie, I think it is. Sorry if I'm butchering your name, Jolie or Jolie. Why do people with other addictions, with addictions, get pity, whereas if you're overweight, you are looked at with this scathing look of disgust? Well, many people have the perception, underline, highlight, bold, perception that overweight people lack control or willpower, or that they're lazy or whatever. Or some people hate in others what they don't want to look at in themselves. They point a finger and call other people names when it's really about them. This is called projection. And when it comes to projection, people are completely unaware that they're doing this. They absolutely don't know it. They disavow unconsciously, meaning, out of awareness, hidden from them. They disavow everything they don't like about themselves or they don't want to see in themselves, and then they attribute it to others. So if someone is conflicted about their own wishes to have more, to be lazy, to be what they might consider greedy, they might project that onto others. Oh, I'm not the one who wants more. I'm not the one who wants to be a little lazy, which, by the way, what's wrong with being lazy sometimes? I'm not the greedy one. It's them. It's the other person who doesn't have control, the other person who lacks willpower, and they hate that other person. Instead of confronting the conflict within themselves. Again, this is all unconscious. It is unconscious perception. It is hidden from their awareness. It does nothing to do with reality. So think about how Donald Trump was nasty to Hillary Clinton during the 2016 debates. He was, I think that most people would agree, he was pretty nasty to her. And then he called her a nasty woman. He was the nasty one. That's projection. That's classic projection. So we often hate in others what we don't want to recognize in ourselves, or what we hate in ourselves, but can't allow ourselves to own it. So when you are discriminating against people because of their size, that is called sizism or fat phobia. One reason or justification for size shaming is the belief, and this is just, this one drives me nuts. They believe that they're motivating other people. So when they shame you, they're just trying to help you. They're just worried about your health. These are people who, know you or something. So that by shaming, the shaming theory of motivation, that by shaming someone else, that's actually going to make them want to do something that they're not doing. And we do this to ourselves. We shame ourselves. And yet it backfires. Because when you're shaming yourself, I can't believe I ate that. I'm never going to lose weight. Or as is more often the case, the way people talk to themselves is, I can't believe you ate that. Can't believe you ate that, talking to themselves. You're such a pig. You're so disgusting. You're never going to lose weight. If people knew what you were doing, they would be so horrified. That is not motivational. That is berating. That is critical. And that does not make you go, gosh, I really want to take care of myself. That makes you want to escape that mean, shaming voice. And how do you escape it? Food. Food is a way to escape your own critical voice. So when other people are doing it, it's the, I'm worried about your health argument. Guess what? In a study of almost 100 women, exposure to weight stigmatizing information made people who were overweight eat more calories and feel less in control of their eating. In another study of this time 73 overweight women, those who watched a stigmatizing video, this isn't even people talking to them, when they watched a stigmatizing video, they ate three times as many calories afterwards compared to those who watched a non-stigmatizing video. So watching someone being shamed can create a sense of shame within. Shaming yourself makes you feel bad. So basically, it just backfires. It makes you worse, not better. Lots of studies support that any kind of fat shaming causes overweight people to become more stressed, eat more calories, and gain more weight. Because if your response to stress is to use food, remember, doesn't make sense, but this is not logical. This is psychological. If you are stressed out, you're going to use food unless you have a new way of responding to your stress. So obviously, shame, whether it's from other people to you or from you to you, shaming is not effective. And it kind of reminds me of teasing. Right? Shaming is not motivating. It kind of reminds me of teasing. Teasing can often be hostility disguised as humor. So this, I just care about your weight. I really just care about you. It's a way of criticizing someone under the guise of seeming to care about them. Just like teasing is hostility disguised as humor, this expression of concern can be, not always, can be criticism disguised as concern. Okay, let's talk more about how to fight body shaming. Here's an article on Health Prep called How to Fight Body Shaming and Accept the Skin You're In. How to Fight Body Shaming and Accept the Skin You're In. And according to this article, body shaming manifests in a few different ways. I'm going to talk about two of them. First, when a person criticizes their own appearance based on a judgment or comparison to others. And second, when someone criticizes another person in front of you. So regardless of how it manifests, body shaming often leads to comparison and to shame, which just perpetuates the idea that individuals should be primarily judged on their physical appearance. It perpetuates the idea that we are only what we look like, that the person in the mirror is the most important part. Now, I'm not going to argue that appearance is part of what we you know, how we communicate to others. If appearance did not matter, and there will be some people say appearance does not matter. Well, that's a very ideal world. If appearance did not matter, you know, none of us would brush our hair. We'd all have dreadlocks down to here. We'd wear burlap sacks or something. We wouldn't have fashion. You know, we care about our appearance. But caring about your appearance is not the same as being a certain weight. And thankfully, I'm starting to see some of that change in the media. You know, I was reading, was it Vogue magazine yesterday? And I noticed that there were some advertisements that were people of all different sizes were modeling the clothes. And I was so excited to see that. You know, caring about your appearance is different from caring about your weight. So important. So the road to increasing your self-esteem and creating a more positive body image starts with you and with your way of relating to yourself. Body positivity is a mental state, not a physical one. Because there are people who can weigh 92 pounds and feel terrible about themselves, and people who weigh 192 pounds and feel really confident and good about themselves and love their curves. So it really is not a matter of what the scale says. It's your relationship to the number on the scale. So before you can change the way you physically look, if you want to, by the way, who's to say you have to lose weight? Oh, hold that thought. I got a call from Nicole. Hi, Nicole. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks, Dr. Nina.
Oh, what's happening?
Okay, so I had this thing happen on Saturday. I feel like I'm making a lot of progress, which I discussed, you know, last week when I called. Wait, actually, it is breaking up. Hold on a second.
You know,
can you hear me?
Nicole, I think there's a problem. There's a problem with the audio. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Because I don't think you're coming through my. I don't think you're coming through my audio.
Do you want me to call again?
Yeah.
Let me call again.
Okay.
Let me call again.
Okay. Ronan, wonderful engineer Ronan, if you can hear me, I don't think the audio is coming through right. Let's try this again. No.
Hello.
Hello.
Is it better?
Yes.
Is it better?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Okay, great.
Okay, it's working.
I can hear you.
Great. So it was a glitch. Great. Ronan, disregard. Right.
Yeah. Okay, so I had this thing happen. I feel like I've made a lot of progress, which I called in, and we talked about that a little bit last week. But I don't want to say setbacks, but I had something happen on Sunday where I knew I was eating emotionally. Like, I knew it was happening. Like, I almost feel like I went from, like, step three or four back to, like, step two.
And which happens.
You have that video about, like, when you know you're eating out of emotions, but, like, you can't stop, and, like, the different levels of progress. But anyway, yeah. I feel like I was emotionally eating, but I wasn't really sure what was happening or why. And then I couldn't really stop. And then I decided, like, at 7 o'clock, I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm not eating for the rest of the night. I've had too many calories today, and I'm just going to make up for it by not eating the rest of the night. So then I ended up, like, hanging out with my friends, and I tried to exercise. And then the next day I tried, like, to eat very, very little to make up for the day before. And I know all these things are wrong.
Yes.
And it ended up, I know that it's, like, it's math. If you have a calorie deficit the next day, it makes up for the day before. But I don't even think I ate that bad the day before. I don't know. It was just, like, it was a mess. I guess my question is, I was emotionally eating. I was aware that I was emotionally eating, but I wasn't sure what I was feeling and what was eating at me. And then to make up for that, I kind of, I don't want to say starved myself. kind of exercised and didn't eat to make up for that, like punish myself for that a little bit, kind of. Not punish myself, but like to make it right.
But that's what you said.
To make it okay.
Punish.
Yeah.
You said punish. Okay, so you to punish yourself for the quote-unquote crime of eating too much the day before, you starved yourself and exercised yourself, which of course is going to only lead to one thing, eventually binging,
you know? Yeah,
so
but it didn't. I feel like I'm back on track now. I don't feel like it led to something bad. Like, it worked for me in the sense that I was like, okay, I'm back to square one. It's fine. I recovered. I made it better. And like, I'm back to my normal life.
Okay. But I just wanted to like, ideally, look at that. Okay. So there are two things going on. One is, and we'll get to that in a second, why you were emotionally eating. But the second is that you have these rules for yourself, which is you've got to make up the next day for whatever calories that you had that you think are too much, rather than wake up the next day and see how you feel. If you wake up the next day and you're like, no, I'm not very hungry because I had so much the night before, that's one thing. But if you wake up and you're like, I've got to cancel out those calories from yesterday. Now you're no longer attuned to your body. You're no longer intuitive.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Dr. Nina?
Yeah.
Sorry, you cut out. I didn't hear anything you said after cancel out those calories.
I said that you're no longer eating in an intuitive way. You're distancing from yourself, and you're imposing some rules made by you, by the way.
And
rather than being in a place of taking care of your body and listening to your body, you are now at war with your body. Right? I'm going to punish my body because it had too many calories. So that's one thing, is to watch these rules that you have created and taken as truisms. They're constructs by you. Secondly, I want to normalize this, that progress is not a straight line. Progress is like, you know, two steps forward, one step back, 10 steps forward, five steps back, you know, but you're still a step ahead. You're never back to square one. So it's often the case that there are these dips in, you know, or backward steps as you're moving forward. So now the real problem here, of course, is why were you emotionally eating? So when did this start, this emotional eating?
It happened on Saturday.
Okay. What time was it? What time?
In the morning.
What time in the morning?
What was the first thing that happened that day?
It was the first thing that happened that day?
No, I'm trying to think what was the first thing that happened that day, or the first thing I ate that day. I'm not sure if I got a blueberry muffin that day. Oh, you know what happened, Dr. Nina? I was leaving the house and I really wanted to have a persimmon. But then I was like, oh, persimmons have a lot of sugar, and like, I love persimmons, so I can like eat a lot of them. And so I decided not to go back into the house and get a persimmon. So instead, I went to the Glen Center, which is by my house, and I ended up getting a coffee from Starbucks, and then going to this amazing bakery called Jade's and getting a blueberry muffin. I didn't eat all of it. I only had a little bit of it. Wait, was it really that day? I think that may have been the day before. But I could tell you my boyfriend was out of town. I was going to work on Saturday. I worked for like 5 hours on Saturday, and I was a little bit nervous and apprehensive about the change, because we have these rules on Saturdays, because I'm working in sales right now, and the rules had changed, and I wasn't really happy about the rules. And I guess I was also feeling a little apprehensive because while my boyfriend was out of town, I decided to stay at his place while he was gone. And my parents, and maybe I was nervous about what they'll think, and maybe I was nervous about just being on my own.
Oh, there's a lot there. Okay, so there's a lot of so first of all, you set yourself up by creating deprivation. What you really want, you don't let yourself have. Yeah, and you impose the rules. Oh, it has a lot of sugar, rather than it's a fruit. I want it. Okay, so you set yourself up by deprivation. But then it's also you're realizing, oh, this is all a distraction from other deeper anxieties. So the anxiety over sugar hides the true anxiety over these new rules at your job, over what your parents might think, and there might be a bigger picture issue about that, staying with your boyfriend, and we know that they have issues with your boyfriend.
That totally makes sense. I think it was definitely a distraction from... I think it was a distraction. I didn't want to think about what my parents would think, and I didn't want to actually deal with what I was feeling, like not liking. But the thing is, I couldn't do anything about that. I think that's the thing. I couldn't really change the rules because I'm not the boss. So I couldn't change the rules that I wasn't happy about. I had to just play by the rules, and that was frustrating for me. And, like, me staying at my boyfriend's place while he was gone, like, my parents are going to feel how they feel. I can't change the way they feel.
And you
know, I can, communicate, but...
Okay, so could it be that you transferred a sense of helplessness and powerlessness over your job and the people who set the rules there, and your helplessness and powerlessness over your parents' ideas and thoughts, transferred from which you can't do anything onto food, which ostensibly you can do something about? So I'm
absolutely
okay.
You got it. That's what it was. So in those moments, what do I do when I feel helpless and powerless? That's exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
Helpless and powerless.
Yeah,
so, you hit the nail on the head, as usual.
Ooh, no pressure. But look, helplessness is one of the worst feelings that a person can feel. My colleague and Lance Dodas, who was kind enough to write a blurb on, you know, on the Binge Cure, he writes a lot about helplessness and how it is the absolute most awful experience that humans can feel. It brings them back to the helplessness of childhood, or, you know, being a helpless baby, or just that sense of having no sense of agency over your life. And so it's so unbearable that we transfer helplessness over areas of our life onto helplessness over food or whatever it is that you're feeling that you're out of control with. So what do you do is you identify, wait, I feel out of control. When I'm out of control, really, that means I feel powerless. And that usually goes with helpless. If I were not feeling out of control, helpless, or powerless over food, what in my life would I be feeling that about? Where in my life am I feeling powerless or helpless?
Right. So I'm saying, let's say I distinguish in that moment that I'm feeling helplessness and power. I'm feeling helpless and powerless over the rules at work, and also the boy staying at the boyfriend's place. What do I do then? I'm like, okay, I feel helpless. What do I do instead of going to the food? I can't actually fix being helpless.
Right, but you can acknowledge. You can. You have to come to terms with your helplessness in a way. You have to come to terms with the idea that there are going to be people and situations that you can't impact, that you are impacted by. You can say whatever you want to your parents until you're blue in the face. They're not going to be able to hear you. And to be able to say, okay, I know that part of this helplessness is about my parents. And by the way, workplace can trigger parental feelings, because bosses can register as parents. How do I feel about the fact, other than helpless, how do I feel, what are my thoughts about the fact that my parents are taking this stance? Yes, I feel helpless to change their mind, but I am, what? How do you feel about it? What are your thoughts about this?
I feel confident. I feel like I'm more modern. I feel like it's the right decision for me. And I feel like they have to deal with it. And I want to be respectful, and I'll listen to what they have to say. But at the end of the day, it's my decision.
Okay. And are you kind of pissed off that they are putting you in this situation? Are you upset with them?
I don't know. But the thing is, Dr. Nina, I actually have to go because I have a 10:45 meeting I need to run into. Can we finish this next week?
Call me next week.
Okay,
to be continued.
Thank you. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
Thank you for all of your help. This
You're
was
welcome.
Very helpful.
I'm so glad.
Bye. I'm going to call next week.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Well, I think, and we'll talk about it more when she calls next week, but I think that what she's avoiding possibly are feelings of anger and resentment towards her parents that might make her feel guilty too. But we'll find out next week if she calls and get to that. But as you can see from this call with Nicole, it was never about muffins or food, or, you know, being out of control was just disguising an underlying sense of powerless and helplessness. And ultimately, what you got to do is, you know, face what the situation means to you and how it feels to you and process that. It's not enough to just identify it. It's okay, you know, what's it like to feel helpless? What does it remind you of? You know, why is it so unbearable? What else is helplessness disguising? You know, helpless that someone else won't listen to you. Well, that can also cover up feelings of anger that someone is just so black or white. This is how it is. Not going to listen to you. That can be hurtful. It can be enraging. It can be a lot of things that you need to keep digging and uncovering. Like, what's the situation? What do you feel about it? What is going on within? Okay, we only have a few more minutes, but I'm gonna talk a little bit more about this how to counter body shaming, because look, whether you are tall or short or thin or thick or, you know, whatever it is, your hair is curly like this or it's straight and you want it to be different, ultimately we have to learn to embrace and accept what we look like and accept ourselves. I mean, yes, you can lose weight, you can gain weight, whatever, but often people lose weight and then they still don't feel good about themselves because they think, oh, I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to feel good about myself. And they lose weight and they're happy for a little bit, but then something else bothers them. It's like, you know, when you buy that wonderful new couch and you put it in the room and suddenly you need to change, everything else in the room. Oh, the new couch looks amazing, but now the curtains need to change, or now my art looks kind of icky, and you keep finding things that you need to change. If you don't, that's maybe a weird analogy. I'm not sure it actually fits, but I think you get what I'm saying. That even if you lose weight and you feel good about yourself for a while, something else is you're going to find something else that you think you have to fix about yourself, your appearance, because the reality is losing weight does not make you feel good. Feeling good about yourself is an inside job, as they say, right? Happiness is an inside job. It really has to come from within. It's about loving yourself. Actually, I like the idea of self-acceptance more than self-love, because acceptance, to me, encompasses a lot of things. It encompasses loving yourself. It encompasses accepting or coming to terms with the aspects of yourself that maybe you don't like so much, maybe that you're trying to change. Self-acceptance covers a range of different qualities about you. And when you could feel good overall without having to be perfect, when you would say, I wish I were a little bit different in this way, but I really like these things about me. When you can balance that and hold that, you're going to have an overall sense of well-being. So, you know, it's about being able to look at yourself in the mirror and sometimes feel happy about what you see and sometimes not. But the standards of beauty are almost impossible to achieve. The perfect body, or if guys, because I know guys are listening, the perfect, like, you know, a man body with a 8-pack or 12-pack or whatever we're up to now, you know, almost impossible to achieve. And why are we thinking that's even the way to be? Because that's what our culture is telling us. Beauty is subjective. It means something to everyone that's different, and it's constantly changing. So stop comparing yourself to others and start appreciating yourself. Start appreciating yourself. As Dr. Seuss said, today you are you. That is truer than true. There is no one alive who is youer than you. Let me say that again. Dr. Seuss said, today you are you. That is truer than true. There is no one alive who is youer than you. So go out and be the best you can be. Just don't compare yourself to others. There is only one you. There's only one body. There's only one life. You got to make the best of it. You got to go through. You can go through life hating yourself, finding fault with yourself, picking yourself apart, hiding, in having a relationship with food, because you're scared to be in the world. You're scared to be with yourself because you hate yourself for reasons that have nothing to do with you. You learn to hate yourself. What you learn, you can unlearn. Or you can go through life accepting yourself, loving yourself, taking care of yourself, nurturing yourself. And then, you know what? Food is just breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks, and it's something to be enjoyed. That's the goal. That's what I'm here to help you do. And by the way, I've mentioned the book a couple of times. I released a lot more free copies. If you want a copy of my new book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, you can still get it. All you do is pay shipping or handling. You can go on Amazon and look it up. It's almost $20 on Amazon. There are limited copies of this. I just have released more, but it's still limited. But you can grab yours free. Just cover shipping and handling at drnina.info. That's drnina.info. I think you're going to love this book because it really is 18 years of my life and my life as a clinician in helping people break free from binge eating, stress eating, and emotional eating. It's the 18 years of my practice and also some of my own experience, which I talk about, dedicated to helping you be able to change the way you are to yourself and then food, and finally break free forever. You can liberate yourself. You don't have to live the way you have been living. There is another way. I'm here to help you find that other way and put it into practice. DrNina.info. Thank you so much for being here. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. You can listen live or you can listen later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere that you listen to podcasts. The podcast version of the show is called The Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. Thanks again for joining me. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.